Welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey. I'm your host, Agnes Knowles. Many of us become very good at carrying difficult things quietly. We care for aging parents, support partners, raise children, grieve loved ones, and somehow keep showing up for everyone around us. But life has a way of reminding us that even the strongest among us sometimes need help ourselves. My guest today has spent years supporting people through grief, trauma, and life's most difficult chapters. Yet there came a time when she found herself facing struggles she could no longer carry alone. What followed was a journey of healing. Whether you've experienced significant loss, walked beside someone who has, or simply wondered how we continue moving forward after life's hardest moments, I think you'll find encouragement in today's conversation. Before we get started, I'll add a content note. Today's conversation includes discussion of trauma, PTSD, grief, depression, and suicidal thoughts. Lee's story is ultimately one of hope and healing, but if those topics are difficult for you, you may wish to listen when the time feels right. Listen now to my conversation with Lee Atherton. Many of us reach a point in life where we've experienced losses we never expected. The death of loved ones, health challenges, caregiving responsibilities, sometimes trauma that happened years ago but still echoes through our life. My guest today knows a great deal about healing after difficult experiences. As a certified end-of-life, grief, and resilience coach, she's spent years helping people navigate loss and find their footing again. But her own story took an unexpected turn. When a service dog named Shadow became a lifeline during one of the most difficult periods of her life. Today, we're talking about grief, resilience, invisible struggles, the remarkable bond between humans and animals, and how healing can arrive from places we never anticipated. A little sideline here. Lee and I chatted for 3.5 minutes before I clicked record, and we're both on the edge of tears here. So let's see how this goes. Lee Atherton, welcome to the Boomer Woman's podcast, where we are embracing the journey.
Oh, thank you. Yes, and we embrace all parts of the journey, don't we?
And I'm sure our listeners will understand, empathize when it comes to the loss of a pet. Oh my goodness. The tears can come from seemingly nowhere. It comes up at the most inopportune times. Our life seems to go on somehow.
It does. It
Yeah.
does.
Before we talk about service dogs, do you mind telling us a little bit about the life you were living before Shadow came into it?
Oh, yes. I was a end of life expert. I'm a clergy person ordained in the United Church of Christ. I don't serve a local, or at that time didn't serve a local church. So my ministry was, I would fill in on Sunday mornings when my colleagues were on vacation or sabbatical. And then the rest of my ministry was focusing on end of life and grief, primarily in the world of hospice. But eventually I moved that over to doing the work under the umbrella of Coach Rev at the Crossroads, where I could spend even more time with folks who were living life's final chapter or their loved ones who were grieving their loss.
I had a career in elder care. I was also a hospice volunteer. So, I hear you. What drew you to end of life, grief, resilience?
That's a fun question for me to answer
Oh,
because
good.
going into ministry was a second career for me, and it was in my late 30s that I felt called to doing working in the church, working for God, so to speak. And I don't talk a lot about the religious aspect of what I do because I know that that makes some people just say, "Oh, no, thanks." But I did have to go back to school to get my bachelor's degree before I could get my master's in divinity. And the second course I took was a philosophy course. And there were two other women there who were there for the same reason as I, second career going into ordained ministry. One of those women, Donna, became my best friend. But even during that class, we would talk to each other, and she told me that her vision was to be a hospice chaplain. And as she got to know me, she said, "I really think you should consider that. You'd be great at this kind of work." And I told her, "No, thanks. That's not for me." And then our paths were parallel. We went into seminary together. We graduated at the same time. And there were a couple of other times over the years that she said, "Think about it. You'd make a great hospice chaplain." And no way, no way on God's good earth am I going to do that work. We both got ordained. She became a hospice chaplain. I was working at a church. I lost my job not long thereafter. And she called me one day and she said, "I can't find someone to cover my vacation. And you're not doing anything right now. Will you consider it?" And I said, "Ah, Donna, you're killing me. All right, for you, I will do this." And it was an extended vacation for her. So I worked with her hospice organization for almost 2 months, and I fell in love. Who would ever have known? And so I spent the last, whoa, I've been doing this kind of work for almost 20 years now.
It is such a gift, I feel, to be able to be with a company, whatever the terms are, someone in those final, very final stages.
Right?
Yeah.
It is truly a gift and hard to put words to
Yeah,
how
yeah.
profound it is.
Yeah, truly. When did you realize for yourself that you weren't just stressed or overwhelmed, but dealing with something much deeper that led to shadow?
Yeah, my brother died in 2016. And at that point, I had been somewhat the black sheep of the family. I'm the youngest of four kids. And this brother was an alcoholic and a drug addict. And over the years, I had stirred against the dysfunction in our family. I started to do tough love. And one of the most recent things I had done before he died was call the police when he left my house drunk. He had attacked our dad. I told him he had to leave. He drove his dump truck into the house and then drove away. I called the police because God forbid he would hit and kill someone. I would never live with myself. So he ended up being in jail until his trial. And during the months he was in jail, our dad died. And so he didn't get a chance to say goodbye. He couldn't come to the funeral. Some would say and have said that that was my fault that he couldn't go to the funeral. But you know what? It wasn't my fault. It was his own fault. But when he died, my older siblings and their adult families all said that they never wanted anything to do with me ever again. Yeah.
Wow. So
That
he
was.
misses one funeral instead of going to four, five, six, or a whole family's funeral because he was irresponsible behind the wheel.
Yeah. And I, those words that my family never wanted anything to do with me. They hurt deeply. And I was doing okay with it until the person who leads my critical response team invited me out for coffee. Hey, if you want to talk about it, let's go out for coffee. I took him up on it and we were having a really good conversation. He's someone who is deeply trained in trauma support. And he just asked me this question out of the blue. So when was the first time your family abandoned you? And I started to say, never. That wasn't because I had lots of memories of my family being there for me, lots of good memories growing up, fun times, and good family connection. And something about the question just opened floodgates of memories that I hadn't remembered. A time when this brother had tried to kill both my sister and myself. The fact that even before I was a teenager, I was sexually abused by a neighbor and had learned that my parents knew about it and didn't stop it. Times that I had seen this brother violent and lives in danger that I hadn't remembered before, yet he was still welcome to be part of the family. I shouldn't say welcome to be part of the family because I think that piece was good. I'm not one to exclude, but welcomed to be a part of the family in ways that didn't ensure the younger myself safety. So realizing that there were many ways in life that I had been abandoned and not taken care of as a young child, just really threw me into a tailspin of depression and anxiety, panic, social anxiety. There it was a couple of years that I wasn't able to work because of the PTSD symptoms that I had. And that's when Shani came into my life.
It's interesting how that one question just opened a door to all of that.
It amazes me.
Okay, so shadow comes into your life.
Yes, it was while I was at what's called on-site academy. It's a place for first responders and their families to receive support in many ways. And as a first responder chaplain, I was welcome to go there. And I had this vision of an academy being a brick building. It's not, it was a farm with a couple of donkeys. It was gorgeous. I spent a lot of time there. There was another woman who had a psychiatric service dog, and that's where I learned about them. And so I got Shadow as an 8-week-old puppy and trained him with the help of an organization that trains handlers and dogs together. And so from that time, he was by my side 24/7.
And then, how was Lee's life?
Oh, it took some time to come out of that depression and all. But with Shadow, or let me say, without Shadow, there's a good chance I wouldn't be here telling you the story. Not only did he do many things on a day-to-day basis to help me heal, to keep anxiety minimal before it became a full panic attack, but there were two times he literally saved my life where I was suicidal. And I was intending to just smash the car, and he sensed it, and he just went absolutely nutty in the car, barking and whining and pawing at me, and I had to pay attention to him, and it got me out of that moment of real crisis.
Given your love for Shadow by then, was there any realization that if you took the car into the brick wall, you'd also end his life?
Wow, you know what? I never, that thought never crossed my mind.
Sorry.
Wow.
Sorry.
No, don't be sorry. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
I'm going to turn briefly to the women in our audience. They've experienced caregiving, loss, divorce, illness, family conflict,
Oh.
major life transitions. Do we sometimes underestimate the long-term impact those experiences can have on us?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially the losses that we call disenfranchised loss, the loss of a pet, for example, divorce, or even moving from one home to another, if you've really made a connection to the physical space, the neighborhood. And that's a huge loss when we leave that. Disenfranchised losses are those losses that really aren't recognized as being something significant in our society, and so they're diminished, both by ourselves because we hear too often, "Oh, you should be over that. That's not a big deal," and so we ignore our grief, we stuff our grief, and over time, inevitably, it comes back to bite us. And then you have the compound. How many of those have those of us in the boomer generation experienced that we haven't allowed to heal? And so it becomes an even stronger pull on our psyche.
I wonder too if, especially at this age, we've been so used to being the caregiver, the helper, oftentimes the glue that held that family together. It's really hard to say, we now need help.
Oh, so very true. I noticed that I was talking about that in a grief support group I was in just last week for pet loss, and was the first one I had gone to, and I found myself, it was an interesting transition because so often I'm the caregiver. In my professional world, the caregiver for others who are grieving, that going into it, I felt I had that professional hat on. And so there's always a boundary that I maintain the best I can, where I don't be personally, I be professionally, and I'm holding it together. And I found myself doing that at the beginning of the support group. And then I thought, wait a minute, I'm here to be cared for, not do the caring. And it was hard to transition into being the one in need. And I think when we spent our lives being a caregiver, and many of us in this generation, we've cared for our kids, we are or have cared for our parents, and so many others, that's a common thing.
Did you find an extra layer of almost chaplain heel thyself? Like you've got an inside line to the good man upstairs. Surely you can do this. What?
It's the image that just came to mind is of the waves gently rolling in and rolling out. And I know that your audience can't see the actions I'm doing right now, but the slow picture, those waves slowly coming in and out. And that's how I feel that boundary I mentioned, and the term you used, that additional layer of the flow between the professional and the personal. And I'm always professing to my clients and their families, as well as to the first responders I work with, you've got to take care of yourself. Self-care is huge. Well, hey girl, what is it about the oxygen mask? You've got to put it on yourself first.
You finally learned to practice what you preach.
Yes. And sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's hard. And there are times when I need that good Gibbs slap, I call it. If any of you have watched NCIS, that, hey, what are you doing for you? I'm letting myself be the one to be cared for.
By this age, too, I think, many of us think we're empathic. If we see somebody with a broken leg or in a wheelchair or a bad limp because of arthritis, we can be empathic, whether that's actually helping them or whatever. But invisible wounds are so much harder to understand. Is there a reason?
I think because they are invisible. When people look at us from the outside and they see a physical body that looks whole, that's the first impression. And a lot of the hidden, invisible challenges that we face, I think of the mental health disabilities is coming to mind, and people with I had a friend who had trigeminal neuralgia, another disability that she looks fine from the outside, but the pain that she experienced on the inside, nerve pain, made it impossible for her to leave her home or even walk across the living room floor because that little bit of breeze flared up her neuralgia. So people see something that looks whole, and so it's hard to wrap their mind around. What do you mean you're broken? You look fine. Mental health disabilities are ones that for millennia have been poo-pooed. Oh, that's you're making a mountain out of a molehill, or that's not something real. PTSD is one that's common. How many times have men and women been to war? And we think of the greatest generation, right? How many of them served in World War II? And it was never spoken about, the emotional toll. And now all of a sudden we've got all these veterans who are on disability, but on the outside they look okay. So it's that lack of understanding of what's really going on. What do those diagnoses mean? And that first visual that says this person is okay.
Well, and how many of us boomers grew up with, especially fathers, who had undiagnosed PTSD? And we know that
Right.
now, but at the time, we just lived through that life, whatever it
Right.
looked like. Now you're a professional dealing with trauma, grief. Are you able to see the subtle signs that someone's carrying that? Or could be carrying that.
Yeah. Not as well as I wish I could, but there are some signs. And one of the more prevalent we use this. Well, there are two actually. They come to mind as you ask that question that I learned in my work with first responders. One of them is the 10,000 mile stare, where someone is just staring at nothing. And not just for a moment while they're thinking or something like that, but it's a continual stare off into the distance where they're not even seeing anything. And it's hard to call them back into the current moment. Another one, how often do you say hi to someone and how are you doing? Oh, I'm doing great, thank you, right? And we often pass those by. One is in the first responder world, and I'm hesitating. I want to be cautious how I word this, but it has made me tune in much more to every time I have that interaction. What's the person really saying? And so, how you doing? Oh, I'm fine, thanks. How are you? And what fine stands for is messed up, insecure, neurotic, and emotional. Okay? And when you take a minute to go beyond that, oh, I'm fine, thanks. How are you? Well, really, how are you? And listen to the words that aren't being said. Watch the body language. That's another indication that, or another way to see that maybe they aren't doing so great after all.
Have you mastered the look yet? Of like, sorry, the listeners are going to get this gaping silence, but where it's just like this questioning of like, okay, I know you're BSing me. Do you want to tell me how you're really doing? It's that look.
You mean the look I give for those words? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I have a look for my nearest and dearest. Like, I can tell when they're not really fine. I'm not as good with people outside that tight circle, but you deal with people all the time.
Have I mastered that look? I'm not sure if I have. I like to think I have in the way I just stop and look at a person with a soft facial expression that and my body language being relaxed. And I think the key piece in that is the stop. But that invites them to say more. I don't have to use those words. Tell me what's really going on. I can just stop and look and give the space.
Best look I ever developed was when the kids were misbehaving. It's just in a public place, you can give them the
Oh,
look.
yeah.
But so we women are sometimes good at the
Oh, we
look, whatever
are.
that
We
means.
are. Yes. Yes. Yep.
Oh dear. I wanted to ask about resilience. We hear that word a lot. What does it mean to you?
It means having and using the tools and resources to keep ourselves physically and emotionally healthy, and being proactive in how we care for ourselves so that we can keep showing up and doing that work that we've been called to do. If you wait until you're showing signs of not being healthy, I think of resilience as sort of this body armor that we can put on when we face the challenges and difficulties of the world. And it doesn't mean it's going to protect us 100% of the time and 100% fully, but that we have built ourselves up for navigating the chaos of life.
That felt like personal path to learning resilience. Is there a way you can help one of the people that you work with see? Can you help them become resilient? Or is that something that is you find within yourself?
No, I can help them find it within themselves because I think we all have the ability to be resilient when we understand what that is and discover what are the unique tools for us as an individual. It kind of it encompasses all those things that I talk to people about for self-care and what works for me for self-care is going to be different for you. But that's one example. So for me, part of my self-care is being out in nature every day. I know that that helps me be more peaceful, more relaxed. So as a way of building resilience, I make it a point to go out in nature every day. I don't wait until I'm having a stressful day and say, oh, now I'm going to go. But I do it as a regular habit. With my first responders, I talk about the 3 a.m. partners, and those are the people that we identify who we can call at 3 o'clock in the morning, no matter what, and they're going to be there to support us. Do we wait until we're in the crisis to say, oh, who can I call? Or do we think about who are these people ahead of time? And can I talk to them and ask them if they'll be my 3 a.m.ers so that when the time comes, I know who to call? So planning that ahead of time is building that resiliency. Knowing how to respond when the stuff hits the fan. And that if you work in the corporate world, your stuff is going to be very different than if you're an EMT. I individualize it because it certainly is different for everyone, but it's knowing some of those tools and resources and incorporating them into daily life.
Do people or do you notice that people take some solace knowing they can identify 3 a.m.
Absolutely.
people?
Absolutely. So often, even just knowing that there is someone that they could call if they needed to helps when the crisis hits, just go, all right, I know I can call Sally if I need to. No sure answer. And even just knowing that helps ease a little bit of the stress.
So this is totally sideways here, but as you were explaining that 3 a.m. call, I thought I suddenly realized that we live with cell phones now. So few of us have
Right.
landlines. And other than family and some extended family, nobody can, like, none of the calls come through for me between 10 and 6 a.m., 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. Maybe we need to rethink that about, or does the conversation need to happen of if I'm having like a really bad time, can I call you, Lee, at 3 a.m. and then you will, or if you say to me, Agnes, can I call you at 3 a.m., then I have to make sure that you're on, one of the people whose call will in fact come through.
Yes, very true.
Okay, listeners, pay
And
attention to that.
if you don't know how to do that on your particular cell phone, reach out to one of us. We'll figure it out for you.
Exactly. Oh, dear. Now, people, they're well-meaning, but sometimes they'll say things like, you'll get over it, or time heals all wounds, that sort of thing. But do we actually, with a little bit of help and understanding, just learn to live differently alongside the difficult.
Could you ask the question again? Because you ended up asking not where I thought you were going.
Oh, okay. Well, you can do both of them. Well, just, people say you'll get over this or this will pass. That will not happen to the person with the trauma, the grief, whatever
Right.
it is. Do they just learn to live differently alongside whatever that difficult experience is?
Yes. And they can live alongside it in two ways. One where it eats them all up, and one where it is integrated into the new them in ways that aren't necessarily easy, because it's hard to walk through any trauma, any major loss, but in ways that are going to be more hopeful, more healthy. And I say that because when we ignore what the trauma or the grief has done to us, when we try to shove it down and listen to the outside world that says, you'll get over it, you should be fine, why are you still crying? When we own those things and we stuff it deep into ourselves, that is not healthy at all. And I have not seen anyone do that successfully where it hasn't come back to bite them in some way or another. Or when we acknowledge this has happened to me, I need support to go through it. And that support can be for me at the time when I first, right after my brother died, and that question was asked of me. I was in counseling 3 days a week. That's what I needed at the time. Some people with a difficult loss, just maybe a once a month support group or having a good friend. There's no right way to do it other than I would say the only right thing is to acknowledge that it has happened and get the support that works for you and don't stuff it. So those are the two ways. Two choices I believe we have to walk with that experience.
So people will often say things like, you'll get over it, or time heals all wounds. Where did Lee think I was going when I opened that
How
line?
do you respond to people who say those things?
Okay, how do you respond?
When I'm with someone who's grieving,
Politely.
politely, I warn them, especially if it's a loss of a loved one and they're looking ahead at calling hours and a funeral. I always have a conversation about what are the things that people are likely going to say that are going to, you want to just punch them in the nose or tell them to go fly a kite.
You are being polite.
God wanted another flower in God's garden. And I also, when I have the opportunity, I tell people, think about the things you want to say to someone who's grieving, and is it really helpful at the moment? And to the people who are, I say, try and let it go in one ear and out the other, knowing that they're really caring about you and trying to offer you support and encouragement in the best way they know how. Even if it's not the best way for you. Because that is where those comments are coming from. People care.
I can remember after a traumatic neighborhood experience, saying to a woman, "Are you okay?" And it sort of opened the floodgates because apparently I was the only person that ever let her talk about it. So, yeah, it's, okay. For women who feel stuck after a major loss, perhaps you just answered this, where would they begin? Now you've talked about, whether you're 3 days a week at a therapist or dropping in once a month to a support group, whatever. But what their chaplain, if they have
Yeah,
one, but
or
where
their
else?
clergy person if they have one. I tell folks if you're not sure where to go, reach out to feel free to reach out to me. I'm here. But to other end of life or grief experts, we can always find almost anything when we Google, right? And have one or two conversations to talk to, excuse me, have that person walk through your experience with you and help you identify what can work for you. There are so many tools and resources, and I often think about it as you don't know what you don't know. Right. And if you've never had a loss, you don't really know where to turn. Ask the person who has experience, who has knowledge, who knows the variety of tools and resources.
I have had on very odd occasion someone, just because of the nature of this podcast, where we touch on a million different facets of boomer life, say, Agnes, you're in Victoria. Do you know somebody who could help this person I know in Victoria? So, just reaching out,
Right.
and somebody often knows somebody.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay, our pets. We've had pets. A lot of our listeners are currently sharing their life with animals. What is it about animals that help us heal?
Oh, is there anyone else who will sit by your side no matter what you say to them? And that is one area we can share whatever is on our minds. There's also physiologically the act of patting a dog or a cat, which I don't know about many of your listeners. I'm guessing a lot are like me, that you just sit there and you're doing it mindlessly. That is proven to lower blood pressure. So it's helping your stress level. A cat's purring right next to you. Oh. Or a dog laying on your lap. Deep pressure therapy right there. And think,
Yeah, especially the 120
yes.
pounders.
How many people like a heavy blanket on them? Or even our elderly folks, we get them weighted blankets as a calming mechanism. Same thing if your dog sleeps on your lap, or your maybe oversized kitty cat can do that for you. Those are some of the ways that they just really make an impact on our lives.
I'm going to add, well, first of all, just our conversation has, we brought laughter back. The joy is there. I mentioned before I clicked record that I am currently house sitting. These are very old friends that I'm house sitting for. Their dog is approximately 10 years old. Their cat is, I think, a little bit, I think she was here before the dog. And I have been doing this for their holidays for 10
Hello.
years, probably longer. And the dog, of course, is a I don't, shouldn't say, of course. So the dog's a pushover. We love each other dearly. The cat, I am only ever the hired help. For 10 years, I have been the hired help. Literally 3 nights ago, when I just went to make sure there was still a breeze coming in the front door because it's been very hot, she was sitting on the top step. So I opened the door. She came in. She leapt into my lap the minute I sat down. And so she's done this every night now for the
Oh,
last 3 nights. And I am so
yay.
excited that, I mean, one night one of my legs fell asleep. I didn't dare move. I mean, it was just hilarious. There's so much. I'm so thrilled that the cat has finally said, yeah, you'll
Love
do.
it.
So there's, yeah, it's amazing. Animals, and even something that you may not think of as affectionate, like maybe a bird or something, you still
They
talk to
are
them.
company. Yeah.
Now, you had Shadow trained, or you trained her to a certain level. You must have seen in I have a habit of doing that, and I apologize. I put words in people's mouths. Have you seen cases where an ordinary pet animal has done the job of a professionally trained therapy
I
animal?
have seen them do pieces of a. So, yes, I have seen them do pieces. And then I wanted to offer a little bit of clarification. So, a therapy animal is an animal that's trained beyond that of an average pet, trained to go into places like hospitals or nursing homes and such to offer. Even schools we see happening more and more to offer support to another group of people. And then a service dog has much more extensive training to take care of one person, their handler. So people often get the terms mixed up. I just wanted to offer that clarification. Now, what was your question? Oh, do pets do some of those roles? Yes, I have seen pets being aware of their owners being stressed and letting them know in some way, hey, I see something different in you.
Is that how they also sense? Sorry, I'm just going to take the slightly side. Is that how they sometimes sense like a seizure coming on with their
Yes.
person?
Yes.
Okay.
So, and a service dog can be trained to sense that because our bodies change, the chemicals within our bodies change, and so they can smell that change.
Okay.
This is one of my favorite stories where I got my second black lab was from a breeder who was breeding labs specifically for becoming a service dog. She had a son who was 12 at the time, I think. I might have his age wrong. But he had such severe seizures that he could never be anywhere without an adult with him to watch him. I mean, even in the bathroom, taking a shower, mom or dad had to be there with him. Can you imagine? I mean, it's cool when you're a little kid,
Especially a
who
teenager,
cares? But when you're becoming a teenager, you want mama or dad in the bathroom with you while you're taking a shower or coming on a date with you, right? She
Oh, for sure, yeah.
chose one of the dogs from a litter, and what was it she tested of her son's? Might have been his blood, I'm not sure, but something that she was able to get to identify what chemical was changing when a seizure was about to come on. And then she trained her dog to recognize that scent and then alert her son, but more importantly, go grab an adult. So the dog knew, bark at the son, so the son would know, I gotta sit down. Instead of falling and banging his head, and then the dog would run and get an adult and bring the adult to the son to have the medical treatment. So, yeah.
'Cause no offense, I'd rather have my dog in the bathroom while I'm showering than you.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Are there any misconceptions about service dogs or the people that have them?
There are. I think one is that a service dog is just a pet, and that any pet dog can wear a vest and be a service dog. What a lot of people, I think, don't recognize is the extensive training that a service dog has gone through. A lot of people with dogs are familiar with the Canine Good Citizen certification, which is training and then certification that your dog is okay out in public to be with people. And they think, all right, my dog's good in public, but what a service dog is also trained for is to be calm under any situation, is a train rolling through, is an ambulance parking right next to you. My service dog was trained for me being surrounded by medical personnel and being lifted onto a gurney, put in an ambulance, and him being on my lap while all that happens. A regular pet isn't going to do all of that. A service dog, a well-trained service dog is going to, at a restaurant, hide under the table and to the point that other patrons don't even know the dog is there.
One thing that I understand, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, is that when a service dog or a therapy dog is on duty, they're on duty. And I remember saying to my grandson one time, who loves anything that is not human, no, you can't pet that dog because that's a working dog. And having, I think it was like in training, it had the little in training, and the handler said, "Thank you for explaining that to the
Yes.
child," because it so many people think, "Oh, well, obviously, if it's a therapy dog, it's a sweet dog, I'm just going to scratch it behind the ears." Whereas I take it that
Off
is
limits.
frowned upon.
Off limits. If you ever see a service dog and they're identifiable, most often by wearing a service dog vest or a vest that says, do not pat. Sometimes it's just something on the leash that says that. But that dog is working. The dog has to pay very, very close attention to their handler. And if you go up and pat them or talk to them, you're distracting them. So think of that boy with the seizure challenge. If the dog is responding because you've gone up to pat it and it's like, oh, another person scratching me, their attention isn't on that boy, they could miss the cue that the boy is going to have a seizure. Yeah. So please don't ever. You can ask, may I pat your dog and see what the handler says, but never go right up to a service dog. Thank you for asking that question.
Yeah, no, it's just I don't know at what point in time I learned that as working animals, you know, it's one thing if they're off leash at the park having a good romp with the other dogs, but as long as they're on duty, then it is a different matter. What gives you hope when you look at the people you're serving today?
What gives me hope when I look at them? Looking back at the people who have navigated really difficult loss and have made it through. And I think, I mentioned before we went live that I'm okay talking about my story because I want to give hope to someone else. When we know that someone else has made it through, then we know more that there's a possibility for us. And when I can share that with my clients, or family members who are grieving, that yeah, this feels like the end of the world right now, but it is possible to reach the other side. That gives hope.
Probably answers my next question, which is, you know, what would you say to that one listener who's feeling overwhelmed? She's grieving, carrying something really heavy right now. What would you want her to know? And I guess you perhaps partially answered
Don't
that.
give up. Please don't give up. That's what I would say. And then following that up with reach out and find someone who can support you. Even if that support, I hear a lot of people say, I don't know what to do for my sister whose husband just died or something like that. Say to your sister, say to that person you care about, I don't feel what you're feeling, but I want you to know that I'm here to just sit with you. If you want to talk, I'll listen. If you want to be quiet, I'll be quiet with you. So find that person who can do that for you.
Is there anything we haven't talked about that you want mid-age women to think about while they're listening to us or after listening to us?
Keep up the good work. You've done a lot already, and there's a lot left to come.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I concur. Where do we find you on the World Wide Web?
You can find me at coachrev.com. So that's coach, like a life coach, and Rev, short for Reverend. And you won't know that I am a reverend unless you ask me about it, because I'm just down to earth and easygoing. So yeah, coachrev.com.
I usually look at this first and I didn't. Are you? Oh, you are on
I am.
social.
Yeah, so I'm Coach Rev in Facebook, which is where I am most of the time.
Okay. Can I ask you a personal question
Of
before we
course.
close? Full disclosure, there's going to be two because one's come up since. You just said you're Coach Rev. Is the coach and the Rev, are they different people or do they just come together in one Lee?
They come together in one Lee. And whatever hat I'm wearing at any given time is informed by all those pieces of me.
Okay, my second question has just sort of come up, and listeners, there's a possibility now that, and this is not my habit, Lee, but if I put you into tears, I apologize. Listeners, if we both end up in tears, go get a tissue. You've recently lost Shadow. How long does a person wait before another service dog comes into their life?
For me, when Shadow was first diagnosed with terminal cancer, and that was about 4 years ago, and isn't how he died. He actually went into remission and then was declared cancer-free. When he was first diagnosed, our trainer recommended that we get his successor right away while he was still living, so that his successor could learn from him. So I have another dog who I was training to be my next service dog. Sadly, something frightened him, and now he's afraid of people. So he won't be my service dog. But yeah, it's recommended if you know the end of the working dog's career is coming, that you get your next one to learn then.
Okay, and hopefully this is sort of a brighter way to look at it. We all need to retire sooner or later. Is that true of service dogs
Yes,
as well?
it is. And it's
Okay.
different for every dog. And part of my training was things to watch out for, to recognize that retirement is in your dog's future, near future.
This sounds like I'm pulling you and the audience down at the end, and I really apologize, but it's on your website somewhere, that there's a 2 to 3 year wait for
Yeah,
service
that's on the
dogs.
Phoenix Rising website, a foundation that I created when I needed to get my second service dog, and recognizing the extreme cost. So, about $45,000, whether you purchase your dog from as a fully trained dog from a reputable organization, or you do all the work yourself while hiring a professional service dog trainer. To get one fully trained is about a 2 to 3 year wait.
Okay, but the money is raised and the dog is trained. It's not like someone who needs the service dog has to come up with $40,000.
That depends on what organization you're with. My son got his service dog. We didn't. He had to come up with the. This was several years ago, and I think for him it was 38,000 at the time. He had to come up with it all. And they had. Here are some ideas you can do for fundraising, but it's all do it on your own. Medical insurance doesn't cover
Okay.
any of it.
Okay. Tell us briefly then about Phoenix Rising. Sorry, I just had to go in case you're wondering why I'm looking at my other monitor here. I've got this beautiful big black lab
Phoenix.
on the
It's
front page.
Phoenix Rising, Service Dogs Saving Lives. And the URL is one word, Phoenix Rising dash SDSL.com. And when I needed to get Phoenix, I started a GoFundMe. Someone who was an author and a coach for authors reached out and said, "Why don't you do an anthology of some sort and use that as a fundraiser?" And I thought, well, I'll get people who have service dogs to share their stories. That'll be a great anthology. And then I met another coach who ha wrote a book and then went on a North American book tour with her book, fully sponsored, including her RV. And it was about a dog. And so she's been coaching me to get sponsorship. And those two things just exploded and grew into this foundation for advocacy and fundraising for service dogs to get life-saving service dogs where they need to be.
So Phoenix Rising is also a place where a person can
Yes.
donate.
Yes. And
Okay.
donations are tax deductible.
In the
Oh, in
US,
the
I'm in
US.
Canada.
That's right. Yeah.
And yeah, I
Thank
just
you.
I made that mistake. Yeah, no, I made that mistake a few years ago, and didn't get credit for it, so that's all right. Sorry, I don't mean it as a mistake. I didn't know that a few years ago, so the donation was not a mistake.
No, I didn't take it that way. I knew what you meant. Yes. Thank you for clarifying because I would hate for someone to make that donation thinking it would be a tax benefit for them and have it not be. But yeah. And check out the website maybe in a few more weeks. We are doing a complete overhaul. Yeah.
Okay, sounds great. And for it's funny, I just had this discussion yesterday. Our audience is global.
Yep.
They're all over the place. So once again, go to your search engine and put in service animals donations. Like if you do want to make a donation more locally to your in your own country, yeah, it's just such an important thing. I'm sorry, he is Phoenix a
Phoenix
he
is
or
a
she?
he.
Yeah, he looks beautiful on this picture. I'm
Thank
sorry,
you.
he's Okay. Your website links, now that we know there's two of them, are on your page, or in the show notes and on your page at the website. All of your links will be on your page at our
Ah, thank
website.
you.
Listeners, Lee shared some powerful insights today about grief, resilience, healing, and the ways support can arrive when we least expect it. I'd love to hear from you. Have animals played an important role in your life, or has there been an unexpected source of comfort during a difficult season? Please share your thoughts in the comments. If you know someone who's navigating grief, caregiving, loss, trauma, or simply a challenging chapter of life, please share this episode with them. Sometimes one conversation can provide exactly the hope or perspective someone needs. If you're enjoying these conversations about life after 60, be sure to follow the Boomer Woman's podcast so you never miss an episode. Every week, we explore new ideas, fresh perspectives, and inspiring stories from people who are embracing the journey. Lee Atherton, thank you for being my guest today and sharing your story with such honesty. I mentioned at the beginning that, I edit if that something got just too close to the bone that I could edit it out, but you haven't asked me to do that.
No, nope.
I appreciate the work you're doing to support people through the hard times, and I know our listeners are going to take away both insights and hope from our conversation
That's
today,
my
so thank
hope.
you for
And
that.
thank you for being a wonderful host and for the great work you're doing to support those of us who are in this age group.
It's a fabulous time of life if we can get there. Have a great rest of week.
You too. Bye, folks.